to order at 2:18 on March 22nd, and with me today, Senator Giesel, Senator Davis, Senator Menard, Senator Pascban, and myself, Chair Senator Egan. And again, on behalf of the committee, I apologize. We're starting this meeting so late, but we had another meeting that kept going and going and going. And anyway, again, our apologies from the committee. We have two bills to hear today. One is, we'll talk about three. House Bill 28 will not be heard today, but we anticipate hearing that piece of legislation on Thursday. And we have one bill, Senate Bill 70, the Alaska Health Insurance Benefit Exchange. Hopefully, we will be able to pass this legislation out of committee. And we also have a new bill, Senate Bill 78, Liquor License Holder Liability, and that has a further referral to judiciary. Senate Bill 70, the Alaska Health Insurance Benefit Exchange, and Senator French, you are here to continue to present. And thank you for, never mind, you were in the same meeting.
It's there. But thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for the record, my name is Hollis French. I represent West Anchorage in the State Senate. With me is Mr. Motoro, the staffer of my office assigned to this bill. And is the CS, the backslash I, India, CS before the committee? I'm just checking my own records. I'm getting head nods. Thank you. Let me just say at the outset that this CS is the product of many hours of work, work from this committee, work from you, Senator Egan, and your staffer, Mr. Owen, work from my staffer, Mr. Motoro, work from interest groups, indeed from members of the administration. And we have collected that huge amount of work. And while the bill still has a long way to go, I'm thankful for the attention that this committee has put into this CS.
Hey, Senator French, can I just interrupt you briefly? Senator Pascban, can I get a motion to adopt?
To bring the CS before us, just to make
right.
Or what?
The new version.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we bring the CS for Senate Bill number 70, version I, before this committee for purposes of discussion.
Great. Object. Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To go through the changes made by the CS, I've got a quick rundown of the changes made to the original bill. And the changes start on page 2, the CS changes the makeup of the board that will oversee the operations of the exchange. The board came to you as 13 members. The committee has elected to reduce that number to 7. I think it's a good change. It streamlines the operation of the board. And the voting members now include the Health and Human Services Commissioner, or that person's designee, one representative of small employers, one representative of the health care insurance business, one member with expertise in health plan financing, one member with expertise in health plan administration, a health care actuary or someone with similar economic experience, and one consumer representative. In addition to those members, the director of the Division of Insurance will act as a non-voting member of the board. Also on page 3 of the CS, subsection I, which appears on line 9, confirms that board members won't be civilly or criminally liable for the acts they take within the scope of their employ. It's a standard liability exemption for state employees who work or are doing work within the scope of their duties. On page 3, lines 18 to 20, there was some overlap. We've had to renumber all those numbers beginning on lines 19 and downward because we took out A2, and so all the numbers just changed 1 to track that difference. The next substantive change is on line, beginning on line 31 of page 3 to line 4 of page 4. This change requires the Division of Insurance to implement procedures relating to health plan certification, recertification, and decertification. It's something that the Division is very familiar with and uniquely, I think, qualified to undertake. On that same page, lines 10 through 14 requires the Division of Insurance to determine the level of each qualifying plan that will be offered within the exchange. Turning now to page 6, lines 13 to 17 places the Navigator Grant Program under the Division of Insurance, again to give the Division a strong voice in the operation of the exchange and allow them to help the Navigator grant program take effect. Also on page 6, lines 26 to 28, the legislation directs complaints about health benefit plans to the Division of Insurance and not to the federal government, as the old draft did. Again, I think this brings the health exchange to life within Alaska, and we don't send our consumers off to Washington, D.C. to get an answer to their problems. We send them here to Juneau or some other locality. Page 7 now, lines 1 through 4, requires the Division of Insurance to review the rate of premium growth inside and outside the exchange. It's a crucial aspect of the exchange to see if it's working, to see if premium growth is being held down to a reasonable level, and to provide recommendations about whether expanding the size of a small employer from 50 to 100 for the purpose of the SHOP marketplace makes sense for Alaska. Before, this responsibility rested with the Exchange Board. We've now pushed it over to the Division of Insurance, like many of the changes, to strengthen the hand of the Division in the operation of the exchange. Again, on page 7, lines 5 through 8, requires the Division to develop policies and procedures to minimize adverse selection within the exchange and between plans sold inside and outside the exchange. Again, on page 7, now lines 26 to 29, gives the Board the authority to establish advisory groups to provide expertise and input about exchange operations. Advisory groups can be rather informal. They're collections of interested, knowledgeable individuals, citizens who can provide expertise and advice to the Board about the operation of the exchange. It may be a group of hospitals if the question's about hospitals. It might be chiropractors on a question of chiropractor and so forth. It just allows the exchange the flexibility to reach out to the medical community or other communities for expertise. Now on page 8, lines 1 through 13 establishes a new annual accounting report. The report reviews new enrollment, changes in enrollment, tax credits, and individual responsibility exemptions broken down by insurer and by benefit plan where applicable. Again, it's the overseeing of what the exchange's effect on the marketplace of insurance has statewide, both in and outside the exchange. Also on page 8, lines 14 to 23, requires the exchange to cooperate with an investigation by the Division of Insurance. You would think that'd be not have to be stated, but we went ahead and made it explicit. Also, the legislation requires cooperation with federal investigations. Turning now to page 9, lines 2 through 5 states that the exchange will rely on the Division of Insurance determination relating to potential for interstate compacts. This goes back to the idea of pooling, of buying insurance across state lines. It's something that small states like Alaska may be able to benefit from, but I think that giving that explicit power to the exchange is a good one that the committee is adopting as well. Also on page 9, lines 6 through 28, requires the Exchange Board to establish a plan of operation, which is reviewed and approved by the Director of the Division of Insurance. If a suitable plan isn't developed, the new subsection allows for the Director to adopt reasonable regulations to carry out the responsibilities of the exchange. Now, switching to the end of the bill, page 14, lines 17 through 18 have been changed to clarify that user fees from healthcare insurers offering health benefit plans will be relied on to finance the operational costs of the exchange. This solves the so-called AFLAC problem, which is brought to you by one of the members of their company brought to the attention of the committee. Insurance companies that don't offer plans inside the exchange don't want to have to pay for the operation of the exchange, and that seems fair. Only those companies offering plans inside the exchange will be assessing the fee to run the exchange. So it's run by user groups rather than an industry-wide or statewide insurance tax. Also on page 14, line 17, lines 24 to 25 have been changed to give the Division of Insurance authority to adopt regulations to implement their authority under the legislation. Similarly, page 19, lines 25 to 27 have been changed to give the Director of the Division of Insurance ability to adopt regulations, to also make it clear that such regulations won't be in effect until the effective date of statutory changes. Just to comment on those last two changes, it's really in conformity with the practice we adopt now with respect to, for example, the Board of Fish, which has the power to adopt their regulations. The Board of Game has the power to adopt their regulations. We're giving the power to the people who are running this exchange on a day-to-day basis, both the Board and the Division. Finally, page 19, line 31, has been modified to make the transitional provisions related to the board terms effective on July 1, 2011. Before, the bill gave those transitional provisions an immediate effective date, and it's been pushed back by a few months. So with that, Mr. Chairman, those are the changes brought to you in this case. And again, I thank you and the members of the committee and our staff for their hard work.
Okay, thank you very much, Senator French. Questions for Senator French or Mr. Mudrow? Senator Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Senator French.
Good afternoon, Senator Menard.
I had a question on how the board, the people serving on the board, I know they're appointed by the governor, but there's going to be six, and the seventh person was going to be either the CEO or the executive director, but they would not have voting privileges. So what do you do, because this is kind of a mechanism that sets up, you know, that is set up all over the state for different, or and when you have six, and so then in a case of a tie, I want to know, how would this seventh person, which is the CEO, be able to vote and break that tie?
Through the chair, Senator Menard, my understanding, and I'm looking at page two for anyone who may be watching at home or other members of the committee, I'm looking at page two, lines 14 through 24, and I think that it's laid out in an odd way here in the in the language, because you'll see in subsection B, lines 14 to 17, we first put the Commissioner of the Health and Human Services on the board, and we don't number that person, so he's number one or she's number one, and then there's six more listed here, so you've got a total of seven. So there's a natural tie-breaking function within the board itself.
Okay, I'm sorry, I missed that. Good. Thank you for that.
I agree, it's laid out kind of oddly that if I were writing it, but they don't put me in charge of writing statutes, I just think them up. The commissioner would be listed as number one, and that'd make it clear.
Well, I just I just want to compliment you, because this is a very long bill. It's getting better and better, and there's certainly certainly compliments that go to your office for breaking it down and taking care of some of this so we can, at the end of the day, support this. Thank you.
Very kind of you. Thank you, Senator.
Okay, thank you, Senator Menard. Anything further?
Not as a question, but I do have an amendment that when we get to that
point. Great. Thank you, Senator Passman. Senator French, thank you very much. Andy, thank you very much for testifying. And again, we apologize for delaying the start of the meeting. We do have one person here in the audience, Beverly Smith. Ms. Smith, you can come forward, please, and announce your affiliation and name for the record. We'd appreciate that, and welcome.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify. My name is Bev Smith. I'm the Christian Science Committee on Publication for Alaska, which means I deal with the public. I am the legislative and media representative for Christian Science in Alaska. I'm requesting an amendment to SB 70, and that would add one more duty to the Alaska Health Benefit Exchange Board. 2 weeks ago, in anticipation of the hearing that then was postponed, I did deliver to your office a handout. And if you didn't get it through your office, I think Mr. Owens has a handout for you today. I'd just like to read just the first part, which is the wording of the amendment that we're requesting. And it says, the Alaska Health Benefit Exchange Board shall consider the extent and circumstances under which benefits for spiritual care services that are deductible under Section 213D of the Internal Revenue Code as of January 1, 2010, will be made available under the exchange. Now, this handout gives the explanation and the justification for this request. So in my remarks today, I'm just going to give a little more background information. The goal of healthcare reform is coverage for all. And in 2014, when everyone is required to purchase healthcare insurance, the premiums should be of value to every individual. That includes those who rely on spiritual care for their healthcare. Each person should be able to use that insurance that they've paid for to pay for the health care they have found most effective. There are federal insurance programs and some state plans that offer benefits for spiritual care, and on the back of your handout, I have listed some examples of spiritual care coverage. Alaska Care, here in the state, provides state employees and retirees benefits for costs of Christian Science practitioners authorized by the First Church of Christ Scientist in Boston. And I think the insurance exchange should offer the public the same programs that are available to state workers and retirees. Now, some parameters that are set in the amendment would include those spiritual care services that are recognized by the IRS as medical deductions. And those are, and I checked with Washington, D.C., Christian Science, Religious Science, and Navajo Healing Services. Why are we asking for this consideration now rather than later after the exchange has been set up? Well, we have the experience in the state of Massachusetts. When they were setting up their insurance exchange, the church officials went to the legislators and were told, well, don't worry about it now. Wait till the legislation goes through and then deal with the insurance exchange companies. So we did that, and then the insurance company said, oh, sorry, we need to only offer the benefits that were directed to us by in statute by the legislature. So right now we're saying let's front-load this legislation and not wait, but have it in statute so that at least there's some consideration of the possibility of having the insurance companies in the exchange provide benefits for spiritual care so that all citizens have access to the health care of their choice. I see it as an issue of fairness. The goal, of course, is for all Alaskans to be healthy, and many have found the path to health through spiritual care. And a little added benefit, I don't see that this would add anything to the fiscal note of this bill. So in closing, I'd like to just draw your attention to the last paragraph of the explanation, which is at the very top of the second page. The last sentence reads, an opportunity should be provided for the Board of Exchange to consider whether sound business reasons support making these services available to qualified individuals. So I respectfully request that such consideration be inserted in SB 70. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Smith, for your testimony. Questions for Ms. Smith? Senator Menard.
Chairman, thank you. I guess I'm already tired from the afternoon. No, what these are the states, Kansas, Missouri, Oregon, Illinois, Colorado, California, Oklahoma, Texas, and Oregon that have allowed, you said Christian Science, Religious Science, Navajo Healing Services. No. Okay, so.
Through the chair, Senator Menard. These are examples of states that allow coverage for Christian Science care in their state plans.
Right
now, the federal government, through the IRS, allows those three particular entities, Christian Science, Religious Science, and Navajo Healing Services, to claim as medical deductions their expenses for their health care as medical deductions in their IRS dividends or whatever they fill out their forms.
So, excuse me. So you tried to get that in a state before, and they encouraged you and said that, you know, it can happen, but you didn't. So now you're coming to what states was proactive and put it into an exchange that is currently doing this?
Well, the only one, through the chair, Senator Menard, the only one I'm aware of right now, recently, Utah passed a bill that set up a task force to investigate setting up the exchange. So they're not even as far as we are in that regard. But they did accept consideration of spiritual care in their duties of their task force. But that's the only one I'm aware of right now.
So Alaska would be the first to actually follow through should this pass out.
I think that would be great.
I'm just trying to get thank
you. Mr. Chairman, to follow through on the question.
Senator Davis.
Did you not say that you tried to get it in Massachusetts after they had passed the bill? Is that not what you said?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Davis. Yes, that's true. In
and
Massachusetts,
they told you at that time they would go by the bill itself and wouldn't be able to do that. Were you ever able to get it in?
No, not at this point.
All right, thanks.
Okay, thank you, Senator Davis. Further questions for Ms. Smith?
I just have
Senator Pasquin.
You know, whenever, you know, and I understand the belief systems that, you know, people say that prayer can heal. But the question that ultimately one has to come back to is, you know, what's, you know, we're a civil law authority. We're not religious leaders
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is what standard of medical treatment care is it that's being followed? And you know, if, you know, given otherwise, I see no objective treatment standard other than just the belief system.
Through the chair, Senator Pasquin. Right now, I think we're going with what the federal government has recognized as acceptable for medical deductions through the IRS and in various insurance companies that do grant benefits for spiritual care. And there is a record of healing, and I think it's based, the federal government evidently, and these other insurance companies and some private companies have looked at that and recognized that it is effective, and so that they would cover it. As far as standards for the Christian Science Healing practitioners, there are standards that they have to meet and that they are granted authorization through the church, but that's all at this point.
Senator Pasquin.
Is there anything in the law currently that prohibits anyone from participating in a prayer healing process?
Through the chair, Senator Pasquin, I'm not sure. I mean, anyone is allowed to participate in whatever faith tradition they have. But there are only certain ones that are granted this authority or this recognition through the IRS that I know of.
Sir President,
is ultimately the intent of this to have government monies be used for that healing ceremony?
Through the chair, Senator Pasquin, no. I know that through the exchange, and I'm trying to understand all about the exchange, that certainly that those that don't have insurance now would be able to purchase insurance through the exchange. And those that do not have the money to purchase, I think there would be some subsidy of that. Is that, am I understanding that correctly? So that would be, I guess, then if that individual that purchased the insurance that allowed benefits for spiritual care was subsidized by the state, then there would be some government money supporting that, I would guess. But that's something that I think needs to be investigated and considered by the Alaska Exchange Board or some other entity that was set up. I'm not tied to that. But I think that's what we need to investigate and consider, because I think that citizens should be able to get benefits for what they pay for. and they should be able to have choice in their health care benefits. And so it's not a mandate that we're asking for right now. We're just asking for consideration and investigation by the board or one, maybe perhaps one of these special task forces that might be set up in the board that we could investigate it.
Senator Baskin, anything further? Further questions for Ms. Smith? Great. Senator Menard.
Just for clarification, because when you first came up here, I thought you were asking for an amendment to this, and now I'm kind of understanding that. Did you want this to go back to the sponsor or a task force, or just not pass this out at this time would be your request? I'm just trying to get the direction
sure.
from.
Sure, Senator Menard, through the chair. I would like consideration of spiritual benefits to be included in this package, whether it's through this amendment that I'm requesting or if the sponsor and this committee feels that there's another vehicle that would best consider this topic. I'm open to that. So I just wanted to propose it, get it out there on the for discussion.
Seminar.
Thank you, but with your indulgence, I would like to bring the sponsor up to respond.
Yes. That's fine. Thank you, Ms. Smith. Thank you very much for your testimony.
You.
Senator French, if you can come forward again, please. Mr. Mudrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Senator Menard, I take it your question is do I support or oppose the proposal from the witness. You know, this is, it's a difficult question to wrestle with. And in my view, it's probably something better suited for a separate piece of legislation that lets each committee that operates on the issue to focus on it, to focus on the efficacy of spiritual healing and whether it's something you want to have, you know, insurance companies reimburse practitioners for. That's ultimately what it will lead to. I mean, whether the board considers it or whether insurance companies cover it, that's what you're leading to. And, you know, it's an interesting question, and I'll just leave it at that.
Senator Bernard.
As committee members, of course, we try to be reasonable. And when that's proposed, and, of course, she shared with us what happened in Massachusetts, that was probably the same recommendation that they got, and then later when they tried to get it back in, that failed. So I appreciate your responding where you'd like to see your legislation go, and I think I have a clear idea of that. Thank you, Senator French.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Menard. Further questions for Senator French as long as he's in the hot box again? Senator Davis.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman. I know that we have a new CS in front of us and some changes have been made, but this is not the last committee of referral for this bill. And it was the desire of this committee to move this bill out of this committee at this time, but that amendment could be considered in another.
Right, it does have a further referral
to
finance.
Not taking into consideration the place we call the other body.
The other body, yes, but that's true too.
With all due respect to our colleagues, yes.
Right. Further questions or comments for Mr. French? Senator French, thank you very much again. Thank you for coming forward and sponsoring the legislation. And by the way, Commissioner Schroer is in the audience, too, to answer questions, but we'll wait until Senator Paskman. I understand you have an amendment.
Yes, like Mr. Chair. I would move that we advance, and it's before you as version /I.1. Amendment number one, and it would, following entities on page 10, line 10, that we would insert the language, quote, the exchange shall make records of application for receipt of grants of donations under this paragraph available to the public on the exchange's internet website within 30 days after application or receipt, close quote. And the purpose of this, Mr. Chair and committee members, is to require timely disclosures of any contributions that may come in to this exchange, and that the exchange would then post that on the exchange website within 30 days. And the exchange is at page 10, lines 9 through 10, is given the ability to, quote, apply for and receive grants or donations from federal, state, local government, foundations, or private entities. And, you know, what I'm, the focus of this is so that if there are monies coming into the exchange, that those monies are transparent and open, so that there is a clear paper trail that money's coming in and potentially decisions coming out of that exchange. So that's the purpose of advancing amendment number one.
Great. Thank you, Senator Passman. Questions for Senator Passman? Sarah Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
On the amendment.
I won't muddy the waters, but I think 30 days is almost not a reasonable amount of time. I would prefer to go 60, but I defer to your amendment because we get bogged down and, you know, I just know, I think I run a pretty efficient office, and sometimes 30 days just came and went, and I would hate to make it troublesome so that this wouldn't be accomplished the way the sponsor of this amendment had intended.
Great, thank you, Senator.
Putting that on record.
Senator Bassman?
Sure, I think that if the exchange were to find that 30 days was an impossible burden, you know, I would hope that they would come back and so advise us. But again, I think that the intent of this bill is so that if there are donations made, for example, by private entities and decisions that are coming out of that exchange, that there be a transparency there so that, so to speak, a paper trail in and mm-hmm. decisions out is very potentially well known. So it's
great. Thank you, Senator Passman.
From my staff, so let me
maybe further questions for the sponsor of the amendment. Would the sponsor like to comment on you? Senator French supports your amendment. So, group. Okay. What's the pleasure of the body on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the amendment. The CSSB 70 draft version 1,
right.
That one, out of committee.
CS. And we'll add it to the, right.
To the CS.
Okay, Senator Giesel.
I do have further discussion. Are we voting on the amendment?
We're voting on the amendment.
Okay. I'll hold my discussion then.
Great, thank you. Further discussion on the amendment? Is there objection? Okay, the amendment's added to the CS. Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chair, I wondered if Senator French could step up again, whatever you call it.
Senator French.
Thank you.
Senator French, I, about an hour ago, got a copy of a letter that was addressed to you from the governor's office. And actually, I'll give this to Dana. He can distribute it so that it's part of the record. But it's dated March 11th. And the last paragraph really summarizes it. No health insurance exchange legislation is necessary during this 2011 legislative session. We have the internal capacity through DHSS and DCCED to complete the planning work for the insurance exchange mandated by federal law. Accordingly, I do not support SB 70 on policy grounds, nor do I believe a state statute is required for the state to begin implementation. I hadn't seen this before. Comments?
Through the
Senator French.
Senator Giesel, thank you very much for bringing that up. We and I don't know whether you saw the reply we sent back to the governor a day or so later. I'll get a copy to you. Mr. Owen could come this way. We'll give you a copy right now so you can take a look. But I've got several thoughts. Let me just begin by saying, as a member of the legislative branch of the government, I am sure that you are jealous of our prerogatives and our power. I am certain that you would be hesitant to cede to the governor the authority to set up a structure like this. I would bring your attention to the collaborative nature of the committee process. the back and forth of ideas, the compromise that takes place when we do business in public, on the record with the cameras running, open to any suggestion that the public may come forward, as opposed to, frankly, what will be a closed door, top down, you know, agenda-driven operation from inside the from the governor's office. I have a great amount of respect for the commissioner of the Health and Human Services. I have a great amount of respect for many of the people that work inside the administration, and they've been helpful with this specific bill. But you know, there's a reason why we have our power and our duties, and they have theirs. They administer the laws we write. And I think that collaboratively, the 60 of us can come up with a better health care exchange than the administration can, acting essentially alone without our input. So that's sort of the short answer. And I guess I'll just say more length. Well, I'll leave it there and see if there's more to discuss.
Okay, thank you, Senator French. Further questions? Senator Giesel?
Actually, not questions, only comment that originally it was in the hands of the governor. It was only the introduction of the bill that brought it to the legislative arena. A bill was not required for the establishment of the exchange. And the governor has indicated that with the ruling of his attorney general, he is going to implement an exchange. So my question, what I'm questioning is the necessity of going through the lengthy process of passing legislation, since it's now being implemented.
Through the chair, Senator Giesel. You know, I don't know that any other governor has taken the position that no enabling legislation is necessary. It may be that we are the only state in the nation that's taken that view. Some have taken, I mean, there's a variety of views here, as I'm sure you know. Some governors are just opposed to the Affordable Care Act, period. Next subject. They don't like the individual mandate. They don't like the changes in the reforms. And so there's sort of that sort of general sort of point blank opposition to the whole idea of insurance reform and getting affordable insurance into the hands of every citizen. And then there's sort of shades of opposition on down the line, and our governor's been sort of fairly blunt about pushing back against what he sees as an unconstitutional act. I take a different view, and we've had a fairly public disagreement over that. I think that the federal bill envisioned each state creating their own affordable, their own health care exchange through legislation, through the collaborative process. If I'm wrong, I stand to be corrected, but that's been my consistent understanding throughout the process. That's why I put the bill forward. If I had thought at the beginning of this session, when the governor was standing four square opposed to the federal bill, that he intended to create a health care exchange through his own administration, perhaps I would not have filed the bill, but I did, because I think it's important that we all have a voice and that we do our job to put the exchange into effect and do it in a way that we all think is best. And if the governor winds up creating something exactly like my bill, you know, God bless him, and we can all go forward and have a health care exchange that works for Alaskans. But in the meantime, I think we have a duty to continue our work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thanks, Senator Giesel. Further questions for the sponsor? Great. Thank you, Senator French. And Commissioner Scherer, if you're in the audience, can you come forward, please? That's opened up a couple of questions now. Again, Commissioner, thank you for sticking around.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bill Struer. I'm Commissioner Designee for Department of Health and Social Services.
I guess, Commissioner, first, are there questions from the committee for the Commissioner? Yeah, I have a couple. So does the administration does not support SB 70, then? Is that correct?
Senator Egan, the administration does not support SB 70 as per the letter.
Okay. And now that the Florida court has ruled that the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act must be accepted by law, does the administration intend to comply with that mandate or to provide an insurance exchange if, in fact, this legislation doesn't pass? Or are you wary of the federal government setting up an exchange if the state of Alaska declines to do so?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we are in the process of planning for an exchange to be developed for the state of Alaska, and we'll continue with that until the legislation is either overturned or there's new rules that come forward regarding that. And we do not want the federal government involved in any way.
Okay, so if the administration proposes legislation, how would that legislation differ from Senate Bill 70?
Mr. Chairman, we don't know how that's going to differ from Senate Bill 70 because the design of the exchange itself is still in the planning stages, and that's one of the issues that we have is to move forward with this exchange. We need to have the latitude to design an exchange that's best for the state of Alaska based on best practices that are out there in various exchanges that are already ongoing in their development.
So, but you're saying that the administration has the authority to establish that now?
The administration, we believe, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. We believe the administration has the authority to plan for design and implement the exchange. However, to go live with the exchange, we are probably going to need legislation.
That's right.
We are going to need statute. We are going to need something because it has to be self-funded, and there are many rules around that are best established through legislation.
Great. Thank you very much, Commissioner. Further questions for Commissioner Strewer? Again,
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Davis.
I think pretty much the answer that you wanted, you've right. already gotten right. from the commissioner there, but that doesn't keep this piece of legislation from moving forward because we have to have something out there. Is it by 2014 that we're supposed to right. do something or the federal government will take it over and do it for us? Is that not right, Commissioner?
Senator Davis, through the chair, by 2014, we have to have an exchange that's up and running. By January of 2013, we have to have a solid plan in place to implement an exchange.
And so I would like to move that we move this bill out of the committee to the next committee or referral with individual recommendations, with also exception of the amendment that has been added.
Thank you, Senator Davis.
That's with the amendment.
Including the amendment.
Yes.
Great. Thank you, Senator Davis. If no objection, we'll sign individual recommendations and we'll take a brief at ease. Okay, we do have a quorum, and we're out back into session from our at ease. And Next bill we will hear, the committee does not plan to move this out of committee. Today we will hear it again, Senate Bill 78, Liquor License Holder Liability. And again, this bill has a further referral to Judiciary. And sponsor Senator McGuire, Esther Temple from Senator McGuire's staff is here to do the presenting. Thank you, Ms. Temple, for showing.
For the record, my name is Esther Temple, staff to Senator Liesl McGuire, and the senator sends her regrets that she cannot be here in committee, but she would like to thank the committee for its time and consideration of this bill. The intent of Senate Bill 78 is to provide equal treatment to limited liability companies, otherwise known as LLCs, and foreign LLCs in the liquor liability context as they are treated in the business world generally. Presently, persons engaged in businesses commonly use LLCs instead of corporations while leaving intact the limited liability of the LLC members for all other business purposes. As it is currently written, Alaska Statute 04.21.035 is an exception to the protections against individual liability offered to partners of properly registered and maintained LLPs and to members of properly registered and maintained LLCs. In other words, partners of LLPs and members of LLCs are not relieved of the obligation or the liability otherwise imposed upon a liquor license holder under Title IV. So in order to avoid that result, under current statutes, owners of liquor businesses that hold a liquor license that seek limited liability protection have to do business through a corporate entity. However, businesses have increasingly turned to LLCs as a preferred entity for doing business in order to have greater management and efficiency without sacrificing the limited liability protection from business creditors that are afforded to owners of corporations. And LLCs are routinely used in Alaska as well as in the United States as limited liability protection entities in place of corporations. And therefore, Senate Bill 78 would amend the existing statute to state that the liability will be imposed only on partners of a limited liability partnership or a foreign limited liability partnership, but will no longer apply to a limited liability company or a foreign limited liability company. If passed, Senate Bill 78 would encourage business development by reflecting the fact that LLCs are more similar to and used in the business world as alternatives to corporations and are less commonly used as alternatives to sole proprietorships or general partnerships, which pass on general liability to their owners. And that concludes my testimony, and I'm open for any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Temple, for your presentation.
Senator Pascoe. Popped in my mind, and do you know whether foreign corporations can own a liquor license? In other words, where, you know, I know that state-formed corporations can own a liquor license, but I don't know that foreign corporations can own a liquor license. So the reason why I asked the question is you've included in here foreign limited liability partnerships or the limited liability, I understand if it's a limited liability partnership formed under Alaska law that you want to have the same equal treatment as a corporation. Anyway, again, it raises the question as to whether a foreign corporation with foreign owners can own a Title IV liquor license.
Senator Pascan, through the chair, I do not know the answer to that question at this time, but I will look into it for you unless there are people online who may actually know the answer.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Temple. Is there anyone in the audience from state agency that would like to provide any testimony? We have no one signed up to testify. Ms. Temple, thank you very much. We do have three people that are on off-net, that we have two from Alaska Resort that are available for questions. And we have Bob Klein from ABC Brown Jug that would like to provide some testimony. Mr. Klein, are you online?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. If you can state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
My name is Bob Klein. I currently serve on the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. I'm its current chairman. I am an industry member because I am with Brown Jug Liquor Stores here in Anchorage, and I'm the director of sales. One other hat I wear, which will be germane to this, is I'm also a member of CHAR, State CHAR, and serve on their Government Affairs Committee. Mr. Chairman, I was on the ABC board when LLCs were first introduced into Title IV language, and it was our intent, or the state intent at the time, to give LLCs same protection as partnerships and corporations. It's only been recently brought to my attention that we missed the mark. Back in the days when we put it in, it was we were very inexperienced in LLCs, and now that we've seen how they're used and how corporations use them, it really makes sense to take Senator McGuire's changes and insert them.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Klein. Questions for Mr. Klein, Senator Pascban?
Mr. Klein, I agree with you 100% in what you just said, and my real question is on a foreign limited liability partnership, can they own a state liquor license?
I'm not the one to answer that. My own experience with our group, we actually are involved with a Canadian corporation, but we have a United States company that owns the liquor licenses. I think Dick Rostin should be on the line, and if he could answer that, I think it would be more appropriate than me.
Thank you, Mr. Klein. Yes, Mr. Rostin is online to answer questions. Dick Rostin, but don't you hang up, Mr. Klein. We may have another question for you.
I'll stay on, Mr.
Great, thank you. Dick Rostin, Alyeska Resort. Mr. Rostin, are you available to answer the question of Senator Pascban?
Yes, I am. This is Dick Rostin, a lawyer at Thurston Whitney, and represent Alyeska Resort. I also do work for other holders of liquor licenses, and the answer is yes. Foreign corporations, if they're qualified to do business in Alaska, can hold a liquor license. For instance, the corporation to which owns Brown Jug is a Nevada corporation qualified to do business in Alaska.
If I may.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Rostin. Senator Pascban.
Mr. Rostin, do they do that by forming an Alaskan entity, or do they do that just simply by a different process?
They do that by a different process. It's the process that any corporation that is not formed in Alaska is known under our statutes as a foreign corporation, whether they're formed in Canada, whether they're formed in Nevada, Delaware, etc. And they go through a process qualified to do business, to get a certificate of authority to qualify to do business in Alaska. And that is what called liquor stores, you go to say North Inc. in the case of Brown Jug, that it did in order to qualify to hold a liquor license.
Mr. Bassett.
Are the assets of either the foreign entity or the Alaska entity equally subject to a judgment?
Yes, they are equally. If it's a corporation, to answer your question, whoever holds a liquor license is a corporation, regardless of whether it's a Alaska domestic corporation or, in my example, a Nevada corporation, those assets would be at risk.
And that's, if I may, Mr. Chair, that's established as part of the process of qualifying to do business in Alaska by the foreign entity.
Correct.
Great. Thank you, Senator Pascban. Further questions from the committee for Mr. Rostin, as long as he is online? Again, thank you, Mr. Rostin, for sticking around and making yourself available for testimony and to answer questions. Again, Mr. Klein, thank you very much for providing testimony on behalf of ABC and Brown Jug.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And that completes public testimony. And again, we don't plan on moving this out of here today. We'll take it up again on Thursday. And with nothing else to come before the committee, we're adjourned at 3:15.